Good morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 o'clock. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka. It's Monday, April 30th. I'm Chris Todd with Raven News. Sitka's Assembly took its first crack at the city budget on Thursday night. The budget seeks to trim about $1.2 million. Department heads and community leaders said very few of those cuts will go unnoticed. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
Municipal Administrator Jim Dinley says his staff worked hard to figure out just which cuts to make.
And we are well aware that once we hand you the budget, as we have, it becomes the Assembly's budget to work. Our comment to finish on that one is you're going to face some very tough choices.
Under the plan, the Parks and Recreation Manager and a part-time customer service rep at City Hall would lose their jobs. The budget also calls for reductions in hours at places like the library and the counter at City Hall where people pay utility bills. It scales back city services, including the summertime groundskeepers known as grasshoppers, street paving, and other upkeep. It's a common story these days among local governments. Expenses are going up, and the money coming in is going down. In Sitka's case, the city has to start making major repairs to aging roads and buildings. But at the same time, federal and state sources of funding are decreasing, and voters have refused the city's requests to raise taxes. City department heads told the Assembly that losing anything will be painful, giving exhaustive detail about how duties will be combined and how some services will be delayed or eliminated. The police department will lose two positions, which are vacant now and won't be filled. Chief Sheldon Schmidt says those cuts come after reductions to the force in 2010.
I worry about us having a major incident like the drill that we had the other night and not having enough folks around to cover it. And I will do everything I can not to do that. But we've cut five people, and you can't cut that many people without making some reductions.
On to Parks and Rec. Public Works Director Michael Harmon says he would absorb much of the work done by the department's manager. Keeping up with Sitka's busy recreational community could be a challenge.
11 different activities and 7 different school teams and just all those exercises going on, we would really struggle to do that without this position.
And then there are public users of city recreational facilities, ranging from remote control airplane operators to frisbee golfers to bicycling groups and onward. Long-range planning would be hampered, Harmon said, as would support to the Parks and Recreation Committee and the Tree and Landscape Committee. Kettleson Memorial Library Director Sarah Bell painted a similar picture for her department. She says reducing the hours by about one a day could ultimately result in losing a position. Right now, the library is open from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. weekdays and 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. on weekends.
And we do have high hours of access compared to many other libraries, but that's something that I think we should be really proud of. We live in a place that's really isolated. We live in a place where there aren't malls and lots of other places for people to go and be, where they don't have to spend money. And I think we serve our population really, really well.
Bell said in tough economic times, the library becomes more important. For example, offering services like internet access and job search help to people who can't afford computers. Assemblymember Phyllis Hackett wanted city officials to consider sending cruise ship tax money to support the groundskeepers and the library. The money must be used for the direct benefit of cruise passengers. Hackett argued that a good-looking community certainly is to their benefit, as is the library. Passengers and crews from the ships that visit Sitka each summer sometimes use the library for internet access or as a visitor center of sorts, and Bell says many ship crew members even have borrowing privileges. The budget is hundreds of pages thick, and the cuts and other details are too numerous to list here. A public review copy is available at Kettleson Memorial Library, and if you want to weigh in on what should or should not be cut, we have links to the Assembly's email addresses on our website, kcaw.org, and you can also find the schedule of hearings and regular meetings in case you want to testify. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
What's in a name? If it's a beach or a mountain or a stream, it can tell you what it looks like or who's been there. It can also document a change of ownership or the movement of a people. A new book from the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute presents about 3,000 Southeast Alaska Native place names. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfield spoke with the authors and filed this report.
I'm standing next to the highway on the waterfront near downtown Juneau, where Gold Creek enters Gastineau Channel. But those are new names assigned by European explorers or their descendants. The people who lived here before called this place Zontakahini, flounder at the base of the creek. It's now the name of a middle school several miles away. The name, and hundreds more, have come close to being lost, replaced by Western labels. A new book from Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and the University of Washington Press preserves them on paper. Here's the title.
It means our you know, that's why it says our grandparents' names on the land.
That's Harold Martin, who handled many of the book's research logistics. He says the effort started about 20 years ago when anthropologist Tom Thornton came to him with an idea.
We talked at length about what was happening, that we were losing our elders at a rapid pace. And every time we lost an elder, we lost a lot of history and knowledge.
They found funding and started turning to those with the knowledge. Thornton says they weren't sure how much they would find.
A lot of people thought these names were lost, but in fact, they weren't. A lot of them were documented in sources, but a lot of them were still alive in people's minds and memories.
The researchers were also careful to follow protocol. A wrong move, asking the wrong person, could have closed doors.
First thing we had to do was go out into the villages and get permission to proceed with the project. We couldn't just go ahead on our own. We had to get permission from the federally recognized tribal governments.
They took charts or maps to elders, pointing out places and asking for names. Martin found he remembered many from his childhood, sailing southeast with his fisherman father, conversing in Tlingit. The researchers found place names in historical documents, some with challenging spelling. They tried out pronunciations on traditional speakers to make sure they got it right, and sometimes they didn't.
Tom always liked to be real precise on his pronunciation, and there was one word that he tried to say that came out like the private parts of the human anatomy. You know? And then another word he tried to say came out like the Tlingit word for lovemaking.
I always wondered why those old ladies were blushing. Maybe that's...
They laughed, and had a lot of fun.
In addition to the names, the book includes scholarly discussion of native languages and how their use differs with English. Thornton points out that Western names often commemorate a person, a politician or a scientist or someone who funded an expedition.
That's a strong tradition in America, but in Tlingit, you almost never see that. Usually it's the opposite. The people are named after the places rather than the places being named after the people.
Tlingit, Haida, and most other traditional names are descriptive. They can communicate geography or the relationship between features.
The example is Glacier Bay itself was supposedly named after the Tlingit name for the bay. But that name in Tlingit, Sit-i-ti-ge-i, means literally bay taking the place of the glacier.
Finding the place names is more than an exercise in cultural history. They also document human migration and changes in the landscape, such as an ice age or rising sea levels. Glacier Bay across Icy Strait from Hoonah is a good example.
We learned that wasn't the only name, that there was an earlier name, Hutu, which was referenced just to the icebergs in the bay. And then the earliest name they had was Sve-shu-yi, which was when it was just basically a muddy estuary of a small river, but people dwelled there.
The names also document the use of the land. Martin says that's helpful during subsistence or other political conflicts.
I ran into state agency, federal agencies, and conservationists saying that there's no evidence that certain areas were ever used by natives for subsistence purposes. All they had to do is look at our chart, and there's no place in Southeast Alaska that wasn't used at one time or another for one reason or another.
The researchers say the book is not complete. Thornton expects to find more place names from documents and memories, and that's not all.
And hopefully there'll be new names on the land, because that's a tradition that's very important in Tlingit and Haida, is to continue to name places.
Proceeds from the book go to the Heritage Institute to support further cultural projects. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, the part also known as Zontakahini.
The Republican Party of Alaska will have new leadership after the fall election. The Anchorage Daily News reports supporters of presidential hopeful Ron Paul over the weekend successfully put forward a candidate to replace retiring party chairman Rudy Redrick at the state GOP convention in Anchorage. Redrick will be replaced by chairman-elect Russ Millett. Redrick has led the party since 2000 and did not seek another term. He will remain in the post until after the November election. A Juneau gift shop owner who collected municipal sales tax but did not remit it to the city has been ordered to pay up. The Juneau Empire reports 56-year-old Larry Lee Lind was ordered to pay nearly $192,000. City prosecutors say the owner of Woolly Mammoth Gifts and Sourdough Larry's collected sales tax but didn't turn it in between September of 2006 and June of 2011. Lind, in a plea bargain on Friday, pleaded guilty to 5 misdemeanors for failing to file and turn over sales tax returns. He was originally charged with 33 counts. Judge Keith Levy sentenced Lind to make minimum monthly installment payments of $1,919.17 for 10 years. As part of the agreement, Levy imposed a 2.5-year jail sentence with all of the time suspended. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka.